You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And now, live on 670 The Score and the Odyssey app, it's Gabe Ramirez
and Score senior football analyst Hub Arkish.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. We are here hanging out until 9 o'clock. Gabe Ramirez, Hub Arkish, broadcasting live from the Score Hyundai Studios. Brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Got some great guests on the show today. Trevor Sikkema, our nice draft expert, is going to be hanging out in just a few minutes. 6:25, going to jump on the show with us. We got Patrick Finley from the Sun-Times at 7. And then Andy Martinez from the Marquee Network to chat a little bit about the Cubs. And Hub, you know, I would want to just go straight to Bears talk right now. But, you know, Cubs looking good at the beginning of the season. You came in with your Cubs jacket, got the smile on your face, feeling good over there.
Yeah, you know, they're off to a good start. It was disappointing they couldn't get one more in Texas, but, you know, I don't want to get greedy here.
Yeah.
You know, 4-2, if they can just continue at this rate for the rest of the season, they're going to be in good shape.
They'll be all right. Yeah. We like what we've seen so far from, you know, Shota Imanaga, Cody Bellinger giving exactly what, you know, he thought he'd give you. Craig Counsell, you heard Dan Bernstein talking about the walk rates of the Chicago Cubs. What has impressed you the most in the beginning of the season?
Well, That's a great question. I think the fact that with the two key injuries that the pitching, you know, they gave up a lot of runs.
Yeah.
But I mean, for the most part, the pitching has held up. And that was, for me, for the last month or two, has been the concern because, you know, I didn't expect them to do a whole lot with the everyday lineup, but I did think they'd bring in at least one more, you know, number two or number three, and they didn't bring in anybody on the pitching staff. Well, they brought in my, that's not true.
Yeah.
They did. And he looked great in his opener.
Looked great.
So, you know, it's been a fun start so far. For me, it's as much still getting to know Counsell as everything else, you know, and it takes a while. You know, in football, six games, you'd be almost at the halfway point.
Right.
Now, you know, all we got is 154
people
left.
Haven't even started watching yet.
Yeah, you know, so it's early and it's just stay ahead of schedule, you know, stay a winning team, start to build, you know, 10 wins over, you know, 20 wins over, and just have a nice calm season, stay healthy, which, you know, other than a few problems with the pitchers, you know, they seem to be so far. So I think it's been a fun start so far. And I'm glad after getting the best team in baseball, they got the worst second.
Yeah.
Now we'll see what happens with it. This weekend is going to be an interesting test
because
now they get another real test from the Dodgers and, you know, how they perform is going to give me a better feel for where they're at right
now. Yeah, and a guy that stepped in the midst of all the injuries, Luke Little was talking about wanting to face Shohei Ohtani, what that would look like. Obviously, he had an impressive start, you know, just the other day after pitching the ninth inning. I think the Cubs are just impressive. For me, when it comes to the pitching of the Chicago Cubs, yes, it would have been nice for them to get someone else. But, you know, if you've been watching them for the last 2 years, you know that back end of the bullpen, some of their young arms are guys that can eat innings for you. And they proved it, you know, with Luke Little, that they can throw someone in there that can still get the job done in certain situations. So it's been fun to watch. And like you mentioned, the weekend is certainly going to be a good one.
And the most intriguing thing about all of this so far is that I don't think I've ever seen a pitcher, especially a left-handed pitcher, as tall as Luke Little.
Yeah.
I mean, it's I have a hard time focusing watching him because I'm more focused on how big he is.
Did you guys see we got an official weight for him on Parkinson's Spiegel?
I saw it was like 220, right?
So he's listed at 220 on the website. He says on Parkinson's Spiegel 265.
I was going to say,
so just a little bit off, close,
just
right?
A little bit.
There's no way I was buying 220.
Yeah.
Or nobody was.
Yeah, 265 sounds about right from looking at him.
That's a big guy right there. You got the cut over there. We got Alex Kuhn producing today. This is some Luke Little right here. Check this out.
I consider him one of the best hitters in baseball, one of the best left-handed hitters in the game. And,
You know, I think that I can go out there and get any lefty out that I want, you know, if I'm on my stuff that day. So, you know, I'm going to be ready. I'm going to be ready to face him and all the lefties that they have in the lineup.
How are you attacking him? You can tell us. Nobody's listening. How are you going after Shohei?
You know, I might spin a couple early. We'll see. We'll see what my catcher thinks and see what the scouting report is. But you know, I want to challenge him. You know, I know he hits heaters, and at some point in the AB, I'm going to have to challenge him with it. So we're gonna see how that goes.
That was Luke Little talking to Parkinson Spiegel right there. Spiegs with a great question. How are you going to attack Shohei? Going to go right after him? No. Keep it in the dirt. Throw a couple spinners there. But again, it'll be interesting. The Cubs is an exciting team, and it's something that a lot of people are going to be watching. Another exciting team, or what we're hoping is going to be an exciting team, is the Chicago Bears, Hub. You and I haven't had a chance to chat in a couple of weeks, you know, about, you know, just, you know, where the Bears are at, you know, what since things have happened, the Justin trade, the things that have been going on. I'm just curious, you know, what has been top of mind for you when it comes to this Bears team in the present?
Well, you know, I mean, it's a fun time right now. They've had a good free agency season. You know, I mean, they didn't do anything massive, you know, didn't do anything great. But I think they added some real talent at the areas where they had to. I love the Keenan Allen trade. You know, how can you not? I know he's 31 years old, you know, but he's also one of the best receivers, in the league. And you put him with Moore. And now if they do use the ninth pick or one of those first round picks on another wide receiver, and then, you know, you look at adding DeAndre Swift and you look at what appear to be improvements on the offensive line, although we've got to wait and see on that because those are not huge names. It just seems like they've had a very planned, very consistent offseason so far. I like pretty much everything I've heard from Ryan Poles and everything I've seen so far. You know, but it's really going to get interesting now because I am not going to be thrilled if they don't trade at least one of those first round picks, you know, because they still need more and they have the ability to get top talent by trading one of those picks because they've only got four picks of their own right now. And I don't think they can afford to use both picks at 1 and 9. I know everybody is talking about Caleb Williams being a done deal. I can guarantee you it's not. They have not made a final decision yet. Now, I think he's probably the favorite. I think they're leaning that way, but it's definitely not over yet. You know, you still got 2-3 weeks to look at what offers are going to come. And the real offers are going to come now, you know, in the next week or two from somebody else who's willing to pay or even overpay for Caleb Williams. So it'll be really fun the next few weeks. And they're in a good spot right now. There's no question in my mind they've already done enough to be a better team this year. Now, how good can they be? That is dependent a lot on what they do with this draft.
He's Hub Arkish. I am Gabe Ramirez. This is 670 The Score. Interesting, right? I mean, we're talking about not only just, you know, where the Bears are at with the assessment of Caleb Williams, you know, where they're at with the talent that can still be there at 9. But I want to go back to the beginning, you know, which was the Keenan Allen trade that you mentioned. You know, a lot of people were down on Ryan Poles and his offseason up till that point. And then they felt like that's where things, my brother included, he would call me, said it was, people were calling the station. I was getting it a ton. People unhappy with what Ryan Poles had done. And I was just trying to tell people the offseason isn't done yet. But when you get a guy like Keenan Allen with that fourth round pick, I think people really just are underestimating what it is that Ryan Poles is trying to create for this Bears team.
I think it's pretty clear, and I don't know anybody whose opinion I respect who has been unhappy with Ryan Poles offseason. So, following the Bears the last year and a half or two for various reasons has been a little tough. But the main reason is because I just feel like the media coverage has been really bad and people are just reacting to all of these quote experts who are offering uninformed opinions, you know, and basing decisions on that. I think it's more about evaluating what the Bears' needs are and whether Ryan Poles appears to be aware of them and how he's addressing them. And I'm really very happy with what he's done with it so far. I mean, you got to go all the way back to Chase Claypool to find a mistake as far as I'm concerned. You know, I just think he's doing a very good job, but it is going to.
Well, you mentioned that that you'd be disappointed if they don't trade either the 1 or the number 9. So, and when talking about Ryan Poles, thinking he's done a good job to that point, if he doesn't move on from either of those picks, would your opinion change of how he handled the offseason when you're talking about his needs? Because I look at it like there are too many needs to then just try to address all of them in this draft. And so I look at the number 1 pick, number 9 pick, and if you can add two blue chip talent players to the team, understanding that, like you've mentioned a couple of times when we've had shows together, that there's still a year or two out, that maybe adding those blue chip, the blue chip talent now, knowing that you still have, you know, 2 second round picks next year, another first round pick next year, that might be when you make those bigger moves.
Yeah, I think they're still only a year out now. I think they have to contend for the playoffs this year and you know, maybe be a legit Super Bowl contender next year. So I guess that's 2 years to complete the rebuild. But at the end of the day, you know, they're definitely moving in the right direction. And I think that's what everybody wants to see. And it's not just that they've made some popular moves. They've added some big name talent. I mean, you know, you look at Keenan Allen, you look at DeAndre Swift, you look at the safety from the Eagles. They've really added some good football players at their most important areas of need. The DeAndre Swift thing is interesting because I'm a big Khalil Herbert guy, and clearly they didn't sign DeAndre Swift to play behind Khalil Herbert.
Absolutely not.
Or really even to be equals. You know, he's now the number one and Herbert is now the number two. And that's okay if Swift has the same kind of year as he had last year. But, you know, I don't know if people realize he's been in the league 6 years now. And he has had only 1 year where he's really played up to his ability, which was last year. But with what he did last year or this past season, it's a really interesting move. So I'm fine with it. I'm not second guessing anything Ryan Poles is doing right. Because so far everything seems to be moving in the right direction. You know, we've talked about this. Matt Eberflus was never going to be fired.
We agreed on that.
It wasn't going to happen. And I don't know why anybody wasted any time. And it shouldn't have happened. Now, I also still don't know. This is the year that I form my final opinion on whether he is the answer at head coach. I do feel, though, that he had a very good second season. And if he improves again in the third season, then I think they're probably in pretty good shape.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Coach Eberflus, it's been interesting to see, right, Hub, how they've played off one another during this offseason, where the dominant figure has, in fact, been Ryan Poles, who's the GM, should be the case. But, you know, we are in 2024 where a lot of coaches feel as though they have a lot of power. And that doesn't seem necessarily the dynamic here in the moment. I don't know if it's Flus being grateful that he still has his job, or they understand the pairing and there's good communication between the two of them, that Flus knows that Ryan Poles is doing a good job in, you know, facilitating players of top tier talent coming into the team, and Poles feels good about Eberflus and the job that he's done. But, you know, there isn't that coach that feels the need to, you know, have that bravado to be larger than life. And I think that's why the relationship between the two of them works.
Yeah. And you know, if you look at it, all these people who are negative Flus, I mean, the bottom line, after an 0-4 start in what I call the first full year of a complete rebuild, because last year was just redoing the roster, they went 10-3. I mean, how is that a bad coaching job?
Right.
Now, I will say the 0-4 start, I think in some respects was his fault, because I was not happy with the way he handled his training camp. And I don't think they were ready to start the season those first 4 weeks. But he figured that out. You know, I don't think he is responsible in any way for the two coaches he lost. That was just unfortunate and bad moves on the part of those two coaches. Now, you know, you can say he should have known, but I'm not sure how, if you know the details of what really went on. Right. And then, you know, everything he's done since that 0-4 start, I feel pretty good about Flus and Poles right now.
Yeah, and I think about the offensive coordinator and the defensive coordinator position and the hiring of those two, specifically this offseason after all the hoopla that happened during the year, I try to put myself in the shoes of Flus and Poles and, like, what are they really thinking? Now they get a second chance, mm-hmm. right? Flus specifically, like, hey, I brought in my guys that I thought were going to be good, and now I have the opportunity to do this all over again, have a higher, you know, talent pool to choose from, so to speak, instead of bringing in your guys. Were you, when you looked at that process, and ultimately, I know we talked about Shane Waldron and liking the hire, but even on the defensive side of the ball, do you think that the way they approached it was the right way in grabbing those two coordinators?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I don't have any, when I say that,
I guess my question, Hub, is more so like we knew that Flus wasn't going anywhere and he had the opportunity to do it the second time. Did you see are you noticing the difference in the second time around and how he handled the hiring of those two positions as opposed to when he did it the first time around?
Well, I'm not going to lie and pretend that I'm familiar with everything that went on in the, you know, in checking these guys out,
sure,
and the hiring of them. But I will say that, you know, Waldron is a respected offensive coordinator and a good hire. But what people keep ignoring, Luke Getsy immediately got three more, application, you know, tests or whatever you want to call them, to be somebody else's, you know, offensive coordinator. And he is now, the Raiders. Luke Getsy wasn't the problem last year either. You know, again, we can just move on. We need to go back and rediscuss this and rebuild it and everything. But, you know, as we have already agreed and discussed, the I don't want to say the problem. The issues with the offense were Justin Fields, and they were where he's at this point in his development. He is not yet a failure. He may be successful elsewhere, but he was showing no growth in reading the field and in his accuracy. And I think Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus have confirmed for us that they didn't see the growth either. They didn't see any hope for improvement. That's why they made the decisions they made. And I completely agree with them. Now, my biggest hope is that Justin Fields becomes a Pro Bowl quarterback, probably not the Steelers, probably elsewhere, because I do think Russell Wilson will be the starter this year. And I'm not sure how much he's even going to get to play, but I'd love to see, he's such a good young man and he has such a good athletic talent that I'd love to see him develop into, but it wasn't going to happen fast enough, if at all, with the Bears. And so I think they've done everything right so far this offseason.
Yeah, it's interesting, right, Hub? We watch these games, we hear people talk about them, but yet, you know, we can see what's in front of us. And I think the front office, they saw it as well. He's a great person, great individual, had talent, but there was an opportunity to upgrade at a very important position on their team. And they decided to do just that. The Steelers are going to have to make an interesting decision May, right around the corner, on whether or not they're going to pick up that fifth-year option. And that's going to be interesting to see, you know, like you said, what direction that team is going to take and how Russell Wilson is going to take over that squad. But the sixth-round compensation, Hub, when you first saw, you know, come over the ticker or pop up on your phone, what were your initial thoughts, sixth-rounder for Justin?
Well, my first thought was, I can't believe that. My second thought was, now I have confirmation that I have been correct in the way I've been evaluating him, because I do not believe, you know, there's been multiple reports that there was one other offer that was better. But none of these multiple reporters will say who it was from or what
the offer was. Right?
So maybe there was one other offer that was better. Maybe it was a five, or maybe it was just locking in the four without having to earn it, which is still not what anybody thought Justin Fields was worth. And everybody who is making this report is saying one other offer. So obviously, Justin Fields wasn't worth more than what the Bears got for him. You know, maybe a little bit more, and I'm not even sure I buy that. So, you know, again, it's just been, the reporting has been awful. There's been so much bad information out there. And you know, I think it was confirmed for us that for you and I, that Fields, at least at this point, is who we thought he was. And that's why the best they could do is get a sixth-round pick.
Yeah, he's a backup quarterback now. And, of course, as you mentioned, you know, he might have an opportunity somewhere else, continue to grow in that, develop, and maybe find his way into another starting role where he can actually shine. It is Gabe Ramirez. It is Hub Arkish. Coming up next, we get a chance to talk about who can help the Bears in the present. The draft is right around the corner, April 25th. Bears have the first and the ninth. Trevor Sikkema will join the show next and talk to us about the talent that will be there, not only at the number nine slot, but what's still going to be around in the fourth round when the Bears have another pick. Trevor Sikkema will join the show next. Don't go anywhere. It's Gabe Ramirez. It's Hub Arkish right here.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
670 The Score.
I got receivers right now, Marvin Harrison Jr. at the top at number one. I got Malik Nabers right behind him as wide receiver two. And then Romo Dunze not too far behind as wide receiver three. All three of those players are currently top eight on my big board. So that just goes to show you how talented this wide receiver class is. I think both Malik Nabers and Romo Dunze would be wide receiver one in basically just about any other draft class.
Trevor Sikkema right there talking to me. And Mark Grody, when we had a chance to chat with him a bit ago, just kind of lining up the receivers, and we'll get a chat with him a bit more and find out what are his updated thoughts on not only the receivers, the number nine slot, but of course the 75th pick and the fourth round pick for the Chicago Bears. It's Gabe Ramirez, it's Hub Arkish right here on 670 The Score. And do not forget, speaking of draft coverage, our draft coverage on The Score is presented by ChevyDrivesChicago.com and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Hub, we were talking about the records and stuff about the Bears earlier.
Need to turn on my mic first. I just made a mistake, and I hate making mistakes, and I just want to make a real quick. Obviously, the Bears couldn't have gone 10-3 after they started 0-4 because they only won 7 games. And I was doing 3 things at once, and my math wasn't working. So I apologize for that, folks. Yes. They went 7-6. It doesn't change anything I said about the way what they did and how Flus coached them or anything else.
Yeah, that's nothing at all right there. But it would have been nice. Hopefully, that could be the case this year where they put together 10 victories. That would be great. But to do that, they need a couple of blue chippers. Maybe one, maybe a couple more, maybe some more talent via a trade. Let's talk to our next guest right here joining us on the Circus Sports Illinois Hotline. Download that Circus Sports app today. Of course, he's the lead NFL draft analyst at PFF, and he's joining us right now, Trevor Sikkema. Trevor, welcome to the show.
Hey, appreciate you guys having me on, as always.
Yeah. Let's start back with the wide receivers. You know, a lot of people, I've been seeing them lately, you know, because I was dead set, Trevor, on – you know, all three wide receivers being gone before the Bears. So I was trying to curb my expectations and thinking that they won't be there. But then you start seeing things pan out, pro days happening, people getting excited about other players. And then all of a sudden you're hearing about potentially Rome Odunze still being there at number 9. Do you still think that's a possibility, or are you still as high on those three receivers that they'll be gone by the time that happens?
No, I think that it's a possibility. Now, I think if one is going to be available at 9, it's only going to be one. It's not like they're going to sit at 9 and have their choice between one of those two players. But, you know, with Tennessee signing Calvin Ridley, you know, with Atlanta kind of making the noise, you know, bringing in Rondale Moore and Darnell Mooney, you know, of course, like, are those players Rome Odunze or Malik Nabers? No, they're not. But I think that it does cool them off from having to take a wide receiver in the top 10 in the first round. Like, Tennessee's got massive offensive line needs that I think that they need to address at number 7. I think they'll go that direction. And Atlanta has major needs at pass rusher and a corner. And I think they'll have the chance to take the best one of either of those groups as maybe defensive player one off of the draft at number 8. So then you get in a world where you think, okay, well, if we really believe that 4 quarterbacks are going within the top 10 somewhere, well, then, okay, one wide receiver maybe going to Arizona, and one wide receiver going to the New York Giants, and that leaves the 3rd one still available for them at number 9. So I can easily paint you a picture of a world where that could be possible, even for as talented as these guys are.
Trevor, I want to just take you back to the wide receivers one more time for a minute, because there's something here, and I've been doing this for 45 years now, and I've never seen this before, but I have as many as 14 wide receivers that I could see going in the top 65 picks, going in the first 2 rounds. I think they have that kind of talent, and I've never seen that at any position in the draft before. Am I overreacting, or is this just the craziest receiver group we've ever seen?
You know, that's obviously that's a huge number, but it's so easy to start listing off players that you think could be picked somewhere within the top 60 in the first 2 rounds. Let's see. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 wide receivers in my top 50, 10, 11, 12, 13 in my top 60. So it's not that far off, even just from a true big board. And that's not even taking into account, you know, team needs and their desire to get a lot better on offense and get better playmakers in there. And I think there's so many different wide receivers that could sell so many different teams. So there's no question about it. Like, there are so many guys. Like, for example, I feel like I brought up his name a couple of times over the last few weeks, just talking about, you know, when people ask, hey, you know, who's a player that people aren't talking enough about? I'll talk about Javon Baker from UCF, you know, transfer over from Alabama, former 4-star. I think he's extremely talented, and he's just getting really slept on in this class. And the reason why is just because of the volume. There's so many good wide receivers. I say this, and the way that I quantify how much I like him is Javon Baker is probably going to be wide receiver 14, 15 for me. He'd be a top 8 receiver in most other draft classes, and he's going to sit here at 14 or 15. So it just goes to show you how much talent we have in this draft. And I think, you know, you saying 16, that's probably on the high end just for the position to get drafted overall, but not unrealistic because of how good these guys are.
Yeah, even guys like Devontae Walker, who's one of my favorite. I've just been watching too much Drake May film. That's why I like him so much. But, he, you know, he's a guy who I think is going to do well in the league, you know, once he actually gets drafted. We're talking to Trevor Sikkema, lead NFL draft analyst for PFF here on 670 The Score. Gabe Ramirez, Hub Arkish, hanging out with you. People have been in Chicago, you know, they're like, okay, Hub 2 would say that the Bears aren't 100% there yet on a Caleb Williams. Still got a couple weeks to look under the hood, ask a couple people, check out a couple of other guys, check some boxes over there. When you're looking at the other needs of the Chicago Bears, right? If they do pencil in a quarterback at one, assuming, you know, let's assume the wide receivers are not there. I am more concerned on whether or not they take a top defensive end at nine as opposed to an offensive lineman. So I want you to talk to me about the talent at offensive line, because you mentioned, you know, some of the teams in the top 10 that could be looking O-line. I don't want the Bears to do it just selfishly. I don't want them to graft two offensive linemen 2 years in a row in the top 10. That's just me personally. But what can you say when comparing an offensive lineman that might be available there at nine as opposed to the tier of defensive linemen that could be there?
Yeah, I also don't think they're going to do it. And I don't think it would line up necessarily with what would be most impactful for them either. Now, it just kind of depends. You got Braxton Jones, and I think that they're happy with him at left tackle. You obviously draft Arno Wright, like you mentioned, in the top 10 last year. And so obviously you're going to be happy with that investment as well. You bring in Orion Bates. You got Tevin Jenkins. You got Nate Davis. How into those guys are you really? Like, do you believe that they're long-term options for you? You know, Tevin Jenkins has been dealing with injury. You know, Nate Davis has been a little up and down. If you're not happy with that, sure, I could maybe see them jumping on like a Troy Faltanu. But like, are you going to draft a guy who's probably going to play interior for you just because of that situation that you might not be super sold on? I don't know if that's the best investment for number nine. I would instead, and I've done this in mock drafts, and initially I felt like Bears fans were giving me some pushback on it, but now I see people, you know, kind of coming around to it a little bit. If they're sitting at number nine and all three receivers are off the board, I'd actually go interior defensive lineman instead of an edge rusher. Because, look, I like Irvin Dexter. I like Zach Pickens. You know, Andrew Billings is a fine veteran, but Johnny Newton is immediately DT1 on the team if you draft him at nine. And this has been one of the best defensive players in college football over the last couple of years. I think that just because there are some names that Chicago has that you are happy with or that you are comfortable with right now for the Bears interior, that should not deter you from taking a guy that you think could be the best defensive lineman on your team, and that's with Montez Sweat included. Now, I'm not saying that would happen for sure if you drafted Johnny Newton, but it's possible. He's got the potential. I think that he's that good. You could draft a Jared Verse as another edge rusher on the opposite side of Sweat, and Latu could be in that conversation as well. But yeah, when it comes to offensive trenches or defensive trenches, if it's not going to be a wide receiver at nine, I much more heavily lean towards the defensive side of things, and I would even throw interior defensive linemen right in that mix.
You know, Trevor, it seems like we've been talking about the quarterbacks in this draft for 2 years already now, and it is one of the better quarterback prospect drafts, maybe the best quarterback prospect draft we've seen in a long time, you know, maybe ever, I don't know. And nobody has been more talked about in the last week or two besides Caleb Williams than J.J. McCarthy. And nobody has been more misunderstood than J.J. McCarthy. Now, I deal with a lot of crap because I happen to have gone to school at Michigan, so everybody just assumes I must be biased about J.J. McCarthy. The reality is...
My thoughts of it, I've got to be honest.
I know a lot of people believe it. It couldn't be further from the truth. But what is interesting about it is I started telling people a year ago that I thought he would be the best quarterback prospect in this draft because I have watched every one of his, you know, 37 games or whatever, 27 games, you know, two or three times. And I've studied the tape. And so my question for HR is, as you evaluate these guys as an expert, and I'm not talking about, you know, fans who just want to know what they want to know, you know, how much of your evaluation comes from stats and what you hear from other people, and how much comes from watching the tape? Because the reason McCarthy was rated so much lower a month and a half ago than he is right now is because people were just looking at stats, and his numbers don't compare to anybody else's because he ran a completely different offense than the other top five quarterbacks. But if you study the tape, it becomes obvious, you know, how close he is to a Williams, you know, and if you, and I know you are, if you're an expert and you've studied this in the past, you also know that his style is probably as similar to Patrick Mahomes as any quarterback we've seen come out in a while. And I'm curious where you are on him, because it depends on which draft expert you talk to who has him at one or two or has him at five or six. And there's just nobody, you know, there's no group that is all signed on together yet.
Yeah, so the way that I would break these quarterbacks down is, and I do, film is king. You have to watch the film, you know, even as somebody who works at PFF. I mean, we have some fantastic advanced data points and some great metrics that really help quantify performances and try to predict
you know, what guys are going to be jumping from college to the NFL. All of that said, like, if you don't see the numbers on the screen in the film, they don't really matter, right? Both of those things have to match up for them to really actually hold a lot of weight. You know, it's the same thing as the combine, right? If I see a play like Marshawn Nealand is a great example. Marshawn Nealand, the pass rusher from Western Michigan, had some fantastic agility drill scores, very good athletic agility scores. You know, the three cone, the short starter, they were incredible. He doesn't play like that. That's not in his tape. Like, he's not bending around the edge. In fact, like, there's, I think, a decent amount of stiffness that comes in his tape. And so, like, okay, I'm not really counting those tests then, because even though you performed well in a test, an athletic test, you didn't put that on the football field. So, you know, look, you could say to yourself, hey, that he has the potential to do it, and I think that's a different conversation. But going back to your original question, yeah, the tape is the king for these guys. And how I have them ranked when it comes to all-encompassing evaluations, but mainly the meat and cheese of it is tape evaluation. I have Caleb very clearly number one in this class. I have Drake May very clearly number two in this class. I think the way that he is getting nitpicked right now is at a very different standard than it feels like it is with the other quarterbacks, as we're kind of learning what the NFL believes with these guys and how they are ranked in NFL circles. And then for QB3 or QB4, it's very close between Jaden Daniels and J.J. McCarthy for me. I give both of those guys late first-round, early second-round grades, but I believe that there is high potential for both of them to be longtime starters in the NFL. You know, you start throwing around words like, oh, future Hall of Famer, future All-Pro, or, you know, he'll be the quarterback for the next 10 years. I think a lot of that can be hyperbolic. But anytime you got a chance to earn a starting job in this league and be a multi-year starter at the NFL level, you got a chance to do that for a long time in your career. It shows that you've got the skill set to be able to do it. And so, look, yeah, when you look at McCarthy, he doesn't have a 300-yard passing game that a lot of these other guys do, but he plays very well, especially situationally. I mean, there are some certain situations that I will look at with quarterbacks specifically, because at PFF, our tools allow us to really contextualize certain situations with quarterbacks. And two situations that I love to observe of how they performed are intermediate over the middle, right? So between the numbers, between 10 to 20 yards down the field, which is a paramount area that you have to be able to attack consistently in the NFL to really put stress on defenses every single week. So you got to be kind of fearless, and you got to be accurate, and you got to be very smart over the middle of the field. And McCarthy is one of the best in this class at that. You know, his heat map over that part of the field is very hot. So you know that he is willing to do it. And the other area is on third down. How did you perform on third and long? How often were you throwing past the sticks? What was your successful percentage? And McCarthy also grades very, very well in those two categories. So, sure, he doesn't have the pure passing yards, the pure passing touchdowns that some of these other guys do. But in those key contextualized, I would say just situations, he grades very well in areas that are translatable to the NFL that you want to see future NFL quarterbacks play well in. So that's why McCarthy is right there in that conversation with me for who QB3 in this class is between him and Jaden Daniels.
He is Trevor Sikkema. I am Gabe Ramirez along with Hub Arcus here on 670 The Score. You know, speaking of quarterbacks, I'm thinking to myself, you know, obviously there are so many that have, you know, played well in their college careers and, you know, have eyes on them. Do you expect, or who do you expect out of all of them to fall, to drop? Who would you say is going to be unhappy with where they end up at in terms of being drafted?
Is this just quarterbacks overall?
Yeah, yeah, quarterbacks overall. No, quarterbacks overall.
I wonder if it's Drake May at this point, which, again, like, going back to what I was saying before, I feel like we're nitpicking this guy, man, and I feel like he's getting the short end of the stick, because if you would flip Drake May's seasons, his 2022 season, his 2023 season, I don't think we're really having a debate with him going two overall. And it's the fact that he played really well as a sophomore, as a first-time starter in 2022, and then this past year, like, let's be honest, like, he still played well. It just wasn't as good of a year. People are like, eh, you know, he showed some inconsistencies. He wasn't really there. You know, he couldn't put it together for 2 years. All right, so come on, you've got to be able to take bigger sample sizes than that. Nobody's got more big-time throws in college football than Drake May over the last 2 years. Nobody has attacked the middle of the field more consistently with more big-time throws than May over the last 2 years. He's got fantastic production. He gives you some added athleticism. I just wonder if he's going to drop and end up being QB4 in this class. Now, if he is QB4, it's not going to be too far, right? It might be the Giants at 6. It's going to be one of those teams. It's not the Giants, you know, Minnesota Vikings, the Denver Broncos, the Las Vegas Raiders. Somebody's going to trade up and go get him at some point. But
I wonder at this point if it's May who ends up sliding.
Yeah. I mean, that'd be wild. You know, he's my favorite, Trevor. We've talked about this. I just look at his accuracy. It's something that I marvel at. But you know what? I hope he doesn't. I hope he ends up at two. Because I think that the Patriots are going to end up taking Marvin Harrison Jr. instead of Jaden Daniels. That'll be interesting. But we'll see. It's the telenovela, the soap opera that we'll all be watching closely in just 3 weeks. Trevor, I appreciate you hanging out with us, man, and giving us the insight on the upcoming draft.
All right, guys. Appreciate it. Anytime.
Trevor, take care, Sikkema, Trevor. PFF lead NFL draft analyst, hanging out. He's pretty excited about a couple of these guys in the draft, Hub.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very good group. There's no question about that. It's not just the wide receivers. The offensive line and especially the tackles are loaded. There is some real talented cornerback. There is every year this year. The one position that is not as deep in this draft is the edge rushers. I mean, there's a few that are very promising, and I'm sure there's going to be a few more who are going to be very good, but it's not a real deep group. And right now, with everything the Bears have done so far in the offseason, I think probably their biggest need is their second edge rusher because they don't have him yet.
And that'll be interesting to see. I definitely think the Bears are going to trade down at 9 just because I think there's going to be too much talent that is equal in terms of like the holes that they have that they might say to themselves, okay, if I can go back 2 slots, 3 slots, 4 slots, these guys are still going to be here in this group of tier of people. At least that's what I'm hoping because like you, Hub, I do think they need a couple of extra draft picks. All right, what will that wide receiver room look like in the event that a third alpha is brought in there? Can it work at a high level? We're going to discuss that and then hear audio from Brian Baldinger who talks about Roma Dunze as well. It's Gabe Ramirez. It's Hub Argus. We'll talk about that on the other side right here on 670 The Score.
Oh, I think Roma Dunze is ready to step into an NFL team, become the number one wide receiver in some places, and put up big numbers the way we've seen Justin Jefferson or Ja'Marr Chase, some of these guys that have come in, Puka last year. I think Roma Dunze, between his ability to hang in the air, adjust to a ball in the air, the route running, the soft hands after the catch, I mean, he looks like an elite prospect, and that's what I expect him to be day one in the NFL.
NFL Network right there, Brian Baldinger, talking about Roma Dunze. And, you know, I remember talking to, you know, earlier, we had so many draft experts on, but a guy was like, Roma Dunze is Ja'Marr Chase. Let's not be very clear about this. And I was like, what?
I think it might have been Baldy.
It was Baldy when we had him on, right?
I think
you were producing that show. And he said that, and I was like, I got so excited hearing that because the potential for him being the third best receiver of those available, because obviously people are high on Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, even I've likened him to a Tyreek Hill with his speed and just his ability to create space. But Hub, what is that going to be like, right? The Bears aren't necessarily a team that has had three stud number one wide receivers in a room. And obviously it's going to look a lot different in the event that it is Caleb Williams or whoever's, you know, going to be throwing the ball for the Bears. To have that luxury, in my mind, the cynic comes out and says, that's too much talent in the wide receiver room, right? Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to spread that. Somebody's going to get upset. But obviously, you can factor in Keenan Allen's short-term contract situation, and that's why you would bring them in. But can you see something like that working where, you know, three top dogs, a DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, and then a Roma Dunze, who people are saying can be like a Ja'Marr Chase?
Gabe, my answer is going to be, I understand what you're saying. But there is no such thing as too much talent in the NFL.
Okay.
There just isn't. I mean, you know, now one thing that we've seen Poles and Flus be very careful about is that they are very involved in the mental acuity of these kids and their attitudes and what kind of teammates they're going to be. And they're going to be very careful with that. But no, I would not worry about there being too much talent in the room and that being a problem.
It's because I'm trying to wrap my mind around, because then my mind goes, right? Because I have the fan brain. So my mind goes and then I'm like, wait. So is Caleb Williams going to break all the passing records in the first year, the second year? Like, I'm trying to then, you know, multiply it out. Like, okay, Gerald Everett is actually pretty decent tight end with Cole Kmet. And then you got DeAndre Swift catching passes out of the backfield. I read a stat on DeAndre Swift, Hub, that said, like, where he caught the ball, right, in his career has amounted to a negative 544-yard stat where every catch has been behind the line of scrimmage. So he's caught the ball in negative space, but then he's had so many yards of productivity. So I'm just, again, you're thinking about guys that have turned negative yards into positive. You're thinking of a Keenan Allen, a DJ Moore. And I'm just like, what? I can't wrap my mind around what the offense could look like.
Yeah, and it would look that much better if Justin Fields was still your quarterback because of talent you've added.
You could add anybody to that thing.
But there's no doubt in my mind that Caleb Williams is going to be a better NFL quarterback. Well, I shouldn't say there's no doubt in my mind, but I would bet that Caleb Williams is going to be a better NFL quarterback than Justin Fields.
It's a low bar right now for Justin, just by the way. That was a low shot, but I'm just saying, in order for him to be a little better, it's not, you know. But it's a situation where Caleb Williams... You know, people talk about it a lot where, you know, you go over the number one picks that have gotten drafted to their team. You know, he is coming into a very, you know, likable situation with the talent that is around him and the front office that's in place for him right now. And whereas once people were saying he might not, you know, he shouldn't come, or like RG3 or others saying that, you know, he doesn't want to come to Chicago. This seems like the best place for a young quarterback to come into with what's around him right now.
Yeah, there is no team in a better place right now for any one of these top six quarterbacks than the Bears.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at the improvement they showed the second half of the season, the talent they've added, and particularly the special players they now have on offense for that quarterback to work with, it's going to be the perfect spot for whichever quarterback the Bears end up with.
And it's going to be a good one. And we get a chance to talk a little bit more about that quarterback situation, but more importantly, what will those expectations look like for the Chicago Bears? For that, we get to talk to Patrick Finley. He joins us next. More Bears talk on the other side right here with Gabe Ramirez, Hub Arkish on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Indeed, The Score.
Oh, I think Rome Odunze is ready to step into an NFL team, become the number one wide receiver in some places, and put up big numbers the way we've seen Justin Jefferson or Ja'Marr Chase, some of these guys that have come in, Puka last year. I think Rome Odunze, between his ability to hang in the air, adjust to a ball in the air, the route running, the soft hands after the catch, I mean, he looks like an elite prospect, and that's what I expect him to be day one in the NFL.
NFL Network right there, Brian Baldinger, talking about Rome Odunze. And, you know, I remember talking to, you know, earlier, we had so many draft experts on, but a guy was like, Rome Odunze is Ja'Marr Chase. Let's not be very clear about this. And I was like, what?
I think it might have been Baldy.
It was Baldy when we had him on, right?
I think
you were producing that show. And he said that, and I was like, that guy got so excited hearing that, because the potential for him being the third best receiver of those available, because obviously people are high on Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, even I've likened him to a Tyreek Hill with his speed and just his ability to create space. But Hub, what is that going to be like, right? The Bears aren't necessarily a team that has had three stud number one wide receivers in a room. And obviously it's going to look a lot different in the event that it is Caleb Williams or whoever's, you know, going to be throwing the ball for the Bears. To have that luxury, in my mind, the cynic comes out and says, that's too much talent in the wide receiver room, right? Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to spread that. Somebody's going to get upset. But obviously you can factor in Keenan Allen's short-term contract situation, and that's why you would bring them in. But can you see something like that working where, you know, three top dogs, a DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, and then a Rome Odunze, who people are saying can be like a Ja'Marr Chase?
Gabe, my answer is going to be, I understand what you're saying. But there is no such thing as too much talent in the NFL.
Okay.
There just isn't. I mean, you know, now one thing that we've seen Poles and Flus be very careful about is that they are very involved in the mental acuity of these kids and their attitudes and what kind of teammates they're going to be. And they're going to be very careful with that. But no, I would not worry about there being too much talent in the room and having a problem.
It's because I'm trying to wrap my mind around, because then my mind goes, right? Because I have the fan brain. So my mind goes, and then I'm like, wait. So is Caleb Williams going to break all the passing records in the first year, the second year? Like, I'm trying to then, you know, multiply it out. Like, okay, Gerald Everett is actually pretty decent tight end with Cole Kmet. And then you got DeAndre Swift catching passes out of the backfield. I read a stat on DeAndre Swift Hub that said, like, where he caught the ball, right, in his career has amounted to a negative 544-yard stat where every catch has been behind the line of scrimmage. So he's caught the ball in negative space, but then he's had so many yards of productivity. So I'm just, again, you're thinking about guys that have turned negative yards into positive. You're thinking of a Keenan Allen, a DJ Moore. And I'm just like, what? I can't wrap my mind around what the offense could look like.
Yeah, and it would look that much better if Justin Fields was still your quarterback because of the talent you've added.
You could add anybody to that thing.
But there's no doubt in my mind that Caleb Williams is going to be a better NFL quarterback. Well, I shouldn't say there's no doubt in my mind, but I would bet that Caleb Williams is going to be a better NFL quarterback than Justin Fields.
It's a low bar right now for Justin, just by the way. that was a low shot, but I'm just saying, in order for him to be a little better, it's not, you know. But it's a situation where Caleb Williams, you know, people talk about it a lot where, you know, you go over the number one picks that have gotten drafted to their team. You know, he is coming into a very, you know, likable situation with the talent that is around him and the front office that's in place for him right now. And whereas once people were saying he might not, you know, he shouldn't come, or like RG3 or others saying that, you know, he doesn't want to come to Chicago. This seems like the best place for a young quarterback to come into with what's around him right now.
Yeah, there is no team in a better place right now for any one of these top six quarterbacks than the Bears.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at the improvement they showed the second half of the season, the talent they've added, and particularly the special players they now have on offense for that quarterback to work with, it's going to be the perfect spot for whichever quarterback the Bears end up with.
And it's going to be a good one, and we get a chance to talk a little bit more about that quarterback situation. But more importantly, what will those expectations look like for the Chicago Bears? For that, we get to talk to Patrick Finley. He joins us next. More Bears talk on the other side right here with Gabe Ramirez, Hub Arkish on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.